We're convening here remotely, and as such, do our best and encourage participation from the public. With that, let's go ahead and proceed with the roll call.
All right. Director Kosmicki.
Here.
Thank you. Director Carbone.
Here.
Director Coonerty.
Here.
Thank you. Director Friend. Director Friend. I see him. Director Friend.
Here.
Thank you. Director Labar. Okay. Chair McShane.
Here.
Thank you. Director Eskew just emailed. She's will be absent. Director Phillips.
Here.
Director Brown.
Here.
And then Director Story is no longer on the City Council. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We do have quorum, sir.
Thank you.
Lopez is here as well. I didn't get called in roll.
Sorry,
call,
you didn't.
Yeah, I've got a vote, so I'm here.
Okay, I apologize.
Got it. Noted. Thank you. Our first item is to just receive a report on and take action on the status of AB 361, allowing us continued remote meetings for the next 30 days. Les or
thanks, Rich? Chair. Just real quickly, these are the usual findings that the governor's proclamation of a state of emergency is still in effect, which it is, that the board has reconsidered the status of the emergency, and that the county public health officer continues to recommend social distancing measures, which he does. We will need a motion and a vote to adopt those findings to continue to meet remotely. And just a note, you probably saw on the regular agenda, I'll be doing a presentation on the future of teleconferencing and remote meetings next year.
Cool. Thank you very much, Les. Any questions from board members? Go into the public. Siri, anything received?
Nothing received at the district office.
Okay, so we'll look for a motion in a second.
Lopez moves approval.
Second.
Okay, moved by Lopez, seconded by Brown. Siri, let's call the roll.
Director Lopez.
Aye.
Director Brown.
Aye.
Director Phillips.
Aye.
Chair McShane.
Yes.
Director Friend.
Aye.
Director Coonerty.
Aye.
Director Kosmicki.
Aye.
Director Carbone.
Aye.
Director Labar, have you joined? Director Labar, no, absent. Director Eskew is absent. And 1, 2, 3, we have a unanimous approval.
Thank you. Moving on to our next item is just our minutes from the last special board meeting, October 19th. This is an action item. Any questions? Looking to the public.
Nothing received in the district office.
Nothing received. Okay, we'll come back for a motion and a second.
Move approval, Phillips.
Okay.
Thank you.
Recording in progress.
Okay, so moved by Phillips. Lopez, is there a second? Seconded by Lopez. We'll call the roll.
Thank you.
All right.
Director
Kosmicki.
Yes.
Aye. Hold on. I'm going to try to mute this. All right. Director
Coonerty. Yes.
Director Friend.
Aye.
Director Lopez.
Yes.
Chair McShane.
Yes.
Director Phillips.
Aye. Aye.
Director Brown. Brown.
Aye.
And that is approved by unanimously.
Thank you. We'll just go to public comment. Looking for hands, not seeing any public comment items not on the agenda. Okay, yep, no. Siri, anything received?
Nothing received at the office.
Okay, we'll go ahead and adjourn the special meeting of the Board of Directors for the Monterey Bay Air Resources District, 1:39 p.m. And we'll reconvene for the regular meeting of the Board of Directors for the Monterey Bay Air Resources District, Wednesday, December 21st, 2022. The time is 1:39 p.m. We are meeting remotely under AB 3361. We certainly encourage participation and any comments from the public at large. And with that, we'll start with the pledge before we go with roll call. So Mary Ann, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? There's got to be a flag around there someplace in Sand City. Okay, you're muted. But we'll just go. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. There we go.
Oh, hey, that works. Thank you. With that, we'll go to roll call.
I'm sorry.
Director
Castillo? Aye.
Director Cabal?
Here.
Director
here.
Director
here.
Director Lamar?
Hold on a second.
Director
what's the name?
Thank you.
Yes.
Director Alden. That'd be great. Director Phillips?
Aye.
Thank you. Director.
Here.
Thank you.
We have four, sir. Great. Well, we've got a lot of presentations today, acknowledging both board members and staff with quite some longevity with the district. So we'll start with outgoing members of the Board of Directors. Rich, if you will help me and or assist me, I don't know if it's a cutting board or a set of steak knives, but somebody's on the plate, right? So
yes.
Okay.
Yes, thank you, Chair McShane, members of the board. Today we are celebrating and recognizing the departure of three august officials on our board of directors, and they are Ryan Coonerty, Judge Phillips, and Sam Story. And they are receiving the cutting board. The Ginsu knives are not part of the order, but if you want to order it later on, let us know.
It's off there.
I think Siri has a picture of a cutting board she might be able to put up if we crash our system. But simply put, it just recognizes the service dates and the
commitments
of the board. And if I could have Siri not talk right now so we can hear. Starting with Ryan Coonerty, he's been on the board since 2015. He was vice chair from 2018 through 2022. Ryan has been really great for this board, and we're really going to miss him. And wish him the best in his future endeavors. He's not going to be retiring, I'm sure, anytime soon. Next up, we have Judge Phillips, who's been on also since 2015 to 2022 on the Board of Directors. And it's also been a pleasure and an honor working with the judge. You'll be receiving a cutting board as well. And I just want to say that you're...
Recording in progress.
Your experience on the board has really made a difference for this agency and making us one of the best local air agencies in the state of California, if not the nation. And then finally, Sam Story, he's actually not here now, but Sam was on previously from 2007 to 2014, took a little bit of a hiatus and came back this last year, and he was board chair in 2010. So Sam actually brought a lot of fiscal scrutiny to our budget and all of our financials, which was really greatly appreciated. So with that, I just want to say that it's been an honor, pleasure serving under all of your direction. Your wisdom, experience, and leadership has been very beneficial to this agency and will be really missed. And on a personal note, I know the agency went through some dark and difficult times, and your support for me and my position and in doing the right thing has really, really made a difference in my career, and I think in this agency at large. So once again, thank you for your service and best wishes in all future endeavors. And please feel free to stay in touch. You're part of the family, and I expect to hear reports back on how you're doing. So with that, we can turn it over to the individuals, Mr. Chair, if they want to make some comments.
Absolutely. We'll start with John Phillips. Is there anything you'd like to say as a parting wish or departure?
No, I've enjoyed serving on the agency. This is one of those agencies that since we got through the rough patch that you don't have to worry about and you don't have to scrutinize everything as closely as you do with some agencies because you're concerned about the administration. But I've been enjoyed serving with my fellow directors. I think we do some good things, and I've enjoyed and I've learned a lot sitting on the agency. So thank you.
Well said. Thank you very much. Ryan?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say, I think when I joined, it was coming out of a challenging period. And now through the work of the staff and the leadership of Rich and a little bit of help from us on the board, it's really an innovative, impressive agency that's doing absolutely fantastic work, and not just around air quality, but climate equity and opportunity. It's the transformation and the work is it's been really impressive, and it's been an honor to be part of it.
Great, well said. Sam Story unfortunately wasn't able to join us, but again, he was on the agency and then was off and then came back. Just a great resource, great questions. Member of the Executive Budget Personnel Nominating Committee. We want to thank him as well. So to our three outgoing board members, thank you. Cutting boards in the mail, right, Rich?
It should have been delivered.
Oh, how about that? Terrific. Okay. No, we a lot of good there. We have some incredible district staff milestones. I'm so glad. I think we have most of them here. For those five, Rich, you want to tee up some remarks?
Yes. Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Members of the board, this is the time of year we get to honor the milestones of service for our district employees. And this year, it's a whopper. I'm just looking at the amount of time. We've got about 125 years of experience that we're going to be recognizing. And four of those individuals have 30 years in. So that's just amazing to me. And we're really fortunate because that gives a lot of consistency to how this agency is operated. And most of these individuals have come up through the ranks and attained higher positions over the years. And we're really grateful for their commitment and dedication to this agency. And I'll just start off in the order listed here. First off is Mary Gerardo. She's our engineering supervisor. She did start out as an engineer with the agency some 30 years ago. And I can't say enough great things about Mary and her management ability. She's done an amazing job as supervisor these last several years. And we're looking forward to several more years. So she's going to be with us for a little bit longer. So I hopefully won't be announcing her retirement anytime soon. And then next up, we have Teresa Sewell. She's been supervising air quality compliance inspector since I've been here, so that's about 14 years, and she started off her career as a air quality compliance inspector with the district some 30 years ago. So it's really been great to see her grow in the position, and she continues to grow and make a difference, and we're really grateful to have her. Next off, we have Julia Duran, and she's also been here for 30 years, which is remarkable. And she's come up through the ranks to attain the senior administrative assistant position. She's seen a lot of change at the district. She often tells me she's had like at least 10 different supervisors over the past 30 years. And so she's seen a lot of change and growth at the district, and she's been a part of that in a positive manner, especially doing the work that needs to be done in the administrative section. And we'd be lost without her, and it's great to recognize her for this achievement. And David's on vacation right now, but just mention David also started off the district as an air quality inspector, and he moved his way up to a planner, then to now he's the planning and air monitoring manager. It's been a privilege working with David and watching him grow. But 30 years, wow, he doesn't look that old, but he's been doing a great job as our planning and air monitoring manager. And then another individual I'm really excited about, who really is great for the district and fits in really nicely. She has a great complement of experience coming over from environmental health at Monterey County, but that's Bronwyn Nielsen. And she's our air quality compliance inspector too. She's been here now for 5 years, although she may think it seems like 30, but she's been doing a great job these last 5 years, and it's really great to have her here. And we look forward to having her here at least another 25 years so we can be giving this award out to her in 25 more years. So all of these individuals will get a certificate, and they also get a choice of a gift from a clearing sweepstakes clearinghouse or something like that. So it's depend. Your gift value is depending on how many years you've been here. So I think at about 200 years, you get like a free car or something, but you can get a set of dishes or something for 30 years. So once again, I want to thank all the employees for their commitment, and we recognize their number of years of service. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Rich. I know there's at least a couple on here. Any of the employees wish to say a few words? Okay, maybe seeing none. I see some smiles, and we just want to say thank you for your service and for keeping our district running and running well. So congratulations. Thank you. At this point in time, we'll open up public comment. We encourage members of the public to address the board on items not on the agenda. I'll first look in Zoom here. I'm not seeing anybody. Siri, was there any comments received?
Nothing received at the district office.
Okay, so seeing none, we'll go to reports. I'll just very quickly say that the Budget, Personnel, and Nominating Committee did meet today. We took action on the presentation by our auditor and recommended approval. That'll be on the agenda today. And Rich, any word on the advisory committee?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The advisory committee did meet at the beginning of the month and received presentations from AMBAG on climate action plans, from our agency on the electric vehicle incentive program, and on Carmel Valley air monitoring station changes that we'll be taking up in the near future.
Okay, great. Any questions for Rich? We'll just quickly go to the public on either item. Seeing none. Siri, anything received?
Nothing received at the office, sir.
Okay, just comments or referrals from the board members, Chair, wishing everybody a very happy holiday. Yeah, we'll have some new members as we go into the next year, and it's an exciting time. Anybody at all within the board, any comments? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to our air pollution control officer report. Rich?
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. In addition to happy holidays, happy the shortest day of the year. It's only going to get better after this, so the days get longer. I always, once I make it to this part, especially when I used to live in the Northwest, it was very difficult to make it through the winter months. But knowing that the days are going to get longer from now on is great. So just on district business, we have another retirement to announce, and this time it's Laura Sent. Laura was with the district for 3 years and came here right before COVID-19. So I'm not sure her time was typical, but she was our senior fiscal assistant, responsible for accounts, payroll, and other duties. And before her term here at MBARD, she was the office assistant and elected city clerk for the city of San Juan Bautista. So we wish Laura the best in her retirement. She's actually got a retirement date of 12/22, but she took some time off, so she's not here right now. She's enjoying her last time at the district on vacation, so what could be a better way? So we want to recognize, and we've had a celebration here for her time, and she was really great to have here and really helped turn around our fiscal crew. So we'll be missing her, and we'll be starting a recruitment for her position next year early. In engineering and compliance, we've issued two notices for public comment on permit modifications for boilers. This is under Rule 207. And so we're looking, before we can issue a permit, we need to do this noticing. And there is a potential for an increase in emissions. So these notices are available on our website. We'll be recruiting for an engineer and inspector in the new year as well. So a lot of recruitment's going on. The information about positions and how to apply will be posted on our website. So if you know of anybody interested in engineering or inspecting, please direct them towards our website. Our standing item is we've received 11 odor complaints from marina residents since the October board meeting. This is typically the time of year we get these types of complaints because of the meteorological conditions. We know that there are a number of, I've actually witnessed a number of different types of odors when I actually travel through that area at least once a week. I could say that one was most likely attributable to the landfill, and the other one was probably compost that I noticed. And we're sharing this data with the city of Marina and the Marina landfill. So I know this will be plugged into their new study, hopefully, so they can start trying to delineate and attribute odor to the sources out there. Moving to planning and air monitoring, I wanted to welcome new staff, and I think Eli Lessman and Michelle Kaiser. I saw their faces earlier, but I told them to shut their machines down so they can come back in for a second. But just to introduce Eli, he started working in the planning division as an air quality planner in November. Eli has an MS in toxicology and environmental health science from Columbia University and a BS in biology with a minor in biochemistry from Brooklyn College, City University of New York. Eli's held positions previously as an environmental scientist with the California Department of Food and Agriculture and as a research assistant with Columbia University. Michelle started working as an air quality specialist in December. Prior to arriving at MBARD, Michelle was an aquarist at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, where she cared for animals, treated their medical conditions, and maintained the aquariums and exhibits. So she got paid to scuba dive, which is that's amazing. So, but she's joined us here and we're really grateful. So she's got a BS in marine biology from UCSC. Her past work experience includes working as a scientific aide with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. So welcome to those guys. It's a great addition to the staff here at MBARD. Moving on, the electric vehicle incentive program has closed. Staff are continuing to process the applications. We've received 162 applications. 28 of those were for low-income incentives. So we obligated, we've got about 3,900 remaining, but we've obligated about $343,000 for the program. The diesel engine and equipment replacement program, DEER, application period will begin on January 11th. The program uses state funds for replacing higher polluting diesel equipment with cleaner burning models as found in marine vessels, tractors, and other off-road equipment. Applications will be accepted from the public until March 24th. Staff continue to observe weather conditions and air quality in the San Lorenzo Valley to forecast when a spare the air alert will be declared. During the spare the air alert, residents are asked to voluntarily choose devices that use fuels other than wood to heat their home. The program will run through spring when conditions or smoke dispersion improves. No spare the air alerts have been called since the program opened in November due to favorable meteorological conditions. However, we've got a lot of inquiries and complaints from the public. It seems due to the colder weather, we've seen people firing up their wood stoves and heating devices more frequently, and even got a call from the Monterey Herald about this because they're getting a lot of inquiries from the public as well. So as the weather cools, and as we get sort of stagnant air conditions, we expect to see more smoke on a neighborhood type level, not on a general level. Our air quality has actually been pretty good these past few months. Good news, MBARD will receive a $30,000 grant from the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association to develop cleaner air centers in our region. Cleaner air centers are publicly accessed buildings that are equipped with air filtration systems. These buildings are typical evacuation centers. They're open to public so that people can have a place to go to take a break from elevated smoke concentrations or wildfire events. This grant doesn't include administrative costs, so we're working with Breathe California to actually implement the program along with the local offices of emergency services. So we'll give you more information as this program progresses, but we'll be targeting clean air centers in disadvantaged communities to start. On outreach, our Spare the Air program, as I mentioned, is started. This is voluntary, but we'll take full advantage, and we've done a lot of media time to let the public know, just to be aware of how to acknowledge and spare the air during these winter months. And speaking of that, Siri has created a new website on our webpage about cleaning our wood burning information. So folks, typically one way to reduce smoke during the cold winter months is to burn a hot fire and use dry wood so you can get really good dispersion and uplift of the emissions from a wood stove. So we've got a lot of tips on our website for people to turn to get more information on that. And I mentioned the diesel equipment replacement grant program. And then we've got general commercials about MBARD currently running on KPIG radio. Our January newsletter is currently in production. And then we're running EVIP ads. That's our incentive electric vehicle incentive program in the Santa Cruz Good Times, San Juan Bautista, Mission Village Voice, and the Santa Cruz Waves magazine. And then we've got a bunch of radio commercials that are being aired on KPIG, KZU, and Spanish radio stations during this past quarter. That concludes my update and presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rich. Especially thankful for the outreach and the publicity. It's appreciated. We'll go to the board for any questions for Rich on his report. Questions or comments? Okay. Quickly going to the public. I'm not seeing any hands. Siri, anything on your end received?
Nothing received at the district office.
Okay. Well, that's appreciated. Okay. That said, we'll go on to our consent agenda. We have 8 items. Would anybody on the board like to pull an item from consent? Okay, seeing none, we'll just quickly go to the public. Don't see any hands. Anything received?
Nothing received at the district office.
Okay, so then we'll go ahead and entertain a motion and a second for the consent agenda.
Herbone will make a motion for approval.
Second, Kosmicki.
Okay, moved by Carbone, seconded by Kosmicki. Will you go ahead and call the roll, Siri?
Yes. Director Kosmicki.
Aye.
Ooh. Director Carbone.
Aye.
Director Coonerty.
Aye.
Director Friend.
Aye.
Director Lopez.
Aye.
Chair McChain.
Yeah.
Director Phillips.
Aye.
Director Brown.
Aye.
And just double checking because I was off. Director Labar, have you joined us? All right, approved unanimously.
Great, thank you very much. We'll move on to our regular agenda. We've got three items there, and we'll start with a request by staff to go about some improvements to the building. So Rich, we'll turn it over to you.
Great, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So I guess, I don't know how to put this, but we estimated that our roof would cost about $200,000 to replace. We are pretty much terrorized by leaks every time it rains, which admittedly hasn't been that often, but every time it does rain, we end up repairing the building to the tune of, you know, $5,000 to $10,000. And that's not including some of the permanent damage that may be occurring. We certainly don't want to get into structural decay or, you know, black mold or anything like that. So we're really due for a roof. This is the original roof. It's tar and gravel, and it's just failing. And we've been patching it for the past several years, but we decided to bite off the bullet. And based on a number of conversations, we estimated in our budget that this would be about $200,000 to replace. Well, it turns out that we were off by about a factor of 50%. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing, we went through an RFP process and we hired Sonio Incorporated to do the contract management and to process the RFP. And we had five responsive bids, or four, and we ended up coming out with a low bid amount that was significantly lower than the other bids. And this is for a basically a membrane type of structure that should give us at least another 20 years, but it looks to be state of the art. And it's a comparable price with other types of these systems that have been used in the area, according to Sonio. And we have Sonio representatives available if there are any questions. We have Pam and we have, Dustin available. I don't know. But if there are any technical questions, they certainly are able to field those. So at this point, what we're asking the board to do is award a contract to Roofing Contractors Incorporated, which is doing business as Western Roofing Services, which they're the lowest bid. And that bid was $332,567. And we actually had a bunch of other things that we needed to have done too. We have some other types of roofing systems and decks that needed to be repaired and replaced. We've actually taken those out and only included one area that is cracking and failing, that is a different type of a roof system. So, and then in addition, there's an add alternate there that would allow us to replace some additional flashing and capping on the building. So with that, that would be an additional $23,670. So, you know, like I said, we do have the money available in our account to be able to afford this. I'm not sure it's gonna get any cheaper. In fact, I believe Western Roofing Services, once they wanna get awarded before the end of the year, because prices are only gonna go up in the new year. So this is up to the board now to make the decision if this is something that you would like to see done.
Thank you, Rich. I know we've spoken about this. I appreciate you following through. I know we budgeted it. It's a bummer that it's come in more, but yeah, it could lead to additional issues. Yes, I'm sure there might be questions, maybe not from the board. I just want to clarify, Rich. I see Pam there. Thank you from Esonio. Let me just clarify. Esonio will project manage this for us. Is that how that works?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Okay. I see Director Phillips hand up questions at this time. Director Phillips.
No, I know bids are coming in higher. Price of materials and things are up, and transportation is difficult. I don't think we have any choice, but I would just like, I always like it better when we're supporting our local workforce, and this is in San Leandro, but the bids are substantially, there's a substantial difference in it. So I don't think we have any choice. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, we'll just go to the public very quickly. Not seeing anybody. Siri?
Nothing received at the district office.
Okay. Well, there we go. So we'll go ahead and entertain a motion and a second.
I'll move approval of the contract. This is Director Brown.
Okay, moved by Director Brown, and then I see Marianne Carbone's hand up. Was that to second it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, seconded by Carbone. Siri, will you call the roll?
Yes. Director Brown.
Aye.
Director Phillips. Director Phillips.
Okay. Aye.
Thank you. Director Coonerty.
Aye.
Director Lopez.
Aye.
Director Kuzmicki.
Aye.
Director Carbone.
Aye.
Director Friend.
Director Aye. Friend.
Thank you. Chair McShane.
Yes.
Double check. Approve unanimously.
Okay. Thank you very much. Well, the next item is the moment everybody's been waiting for. Les Gerard on next steps as it relates to remote meetings. We may actually get to see one another. So maybe not. I know these remote meetings have been quite convenient in some respects, but there's two sides to that. So Les, we are looking forward to your presentation here. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, members of the board. Let me share my screen. So, what I'd like to do first is kind of review the past, so to speak. So pre-pandemic and prior to the governor's proclamation of state of emergency due to the pandemic and issuance of his executive order, the Brown Act did allow the use of teleconferencing by legislative body members. There were strict requirements for the use of teleconferencing. All votes have to be taken by roll call. Each teleconference location must be listed on the notice for the meeting and the agenda. There must be an agenda posted at each teleconference location. Each location had to be accessible to the public, including those with disabilities, and there had to be the opportunity for the public to offer comment. Finally, a quorum of members must participate from locations within the public entity's boundaries. So in March of 2020, the governor proclaimed a state of emergency and issued an executive order that waived Brown Act requirements for meeting in person. But the executive order did have some requirements. Meetings must be publicly noticed. At least one location must be publicly accessible and available for members of the public to attend and offer comment. And the public entity must be able to quickly resolve reasonable accommodation requests. In September of 21, AB 361, which we know and love, was adopted and became effective immediately as an emergency urgency statute, excuse me. The AB 361 superseded the governor's executive order, but is only effective during a declared emergency by the governor. All votes, as you know, must be taken by roll call, and every 30 days after the first meeting, a majority of members must make the findings that you've come to make ever since. Under AB 361, the legislative body must provide a method by which the public may access the meeting and make public comment. No action can be taken if an internet disruption affects the public's ability to participate. AB 361 is effective through December 31st of next year, but Governor Newsom has indicated his intent to terminate the pandemic state of emergency at the end of February next year, which would make AB 361 inoperative. Now, I'm sure the governor is monitoring the winter situation. If we get a significant surge, he may extend the state of emergency, but so far he's maintained his intent to end the state of emergency at the end of February. In September of this year, the governor signed into law AB 2449, which will become effective on January 1st of next year. That statute incorporates the traditional teleconferencing under the Brown Act and also the provisions of AB 361, but it also provides other more limited means for legislative body members to participate remotely. As I said, AB 2449 includes traditional teleconferencing and AB 361, but it adds what is called a just cause and an emergency circumstances exception to meeting in person. Both of those exceptions require a quorum of members of the legislative body to be in a physical location within the jurisdiction of the public entity that is accessible to the public. So again, these two exceptions do not allow all members of the legislative body to participate remotely. Votes must be by roll call, and the public must be provided ability to participate remotely. Under AB 2449, the meeting must be broadcast with either two-way audio-visual platform like Zoom or a two-way telephonic service with a live streaming webcast. Meeting activity must cease if the internet or telephonic access is interrupted, and members must participate with both audio and visual technology. So under these two exceptions, you cannot participate merely by phone, unless your smartphone has Zoom capability and you can have the visual technology as well. And finally, a remote member must identify anyone 18 years of age or older in the room with the legislator and the relationship to that person, for example, a chief of staff or some other member of staff or even a family member. The just cause exception is under these circumstances. The member must notify the legislative body as soon as possible, which could include the start of a regular meeting, and provide a general description of the circumstances giving rise to just cause. There are four: the care of a child, parent, grandparent, grandchild, sibling, spouse, or domestic partner, contagious illness that prevents a member from attending in person, a physical or mental disability, or official business travel for the legislative body or another state or local agency. Under just cause, the legislative body does not need to vote on implementing that exception for the member needing to participate remotely. The emergency circumstances exception is a little bit different. The member must notify the board as soon as possible and include a general description of the reason, not exceeding 20 words. And that reason is a physical or family medical emergency that prevents a member from attending in person. But the reason does not, or the general description does not need to disclose the medical condition giving rise to the emergency circumstances. Another distinction is that the legislative body must vote on the emergency circumstances exception. If the board is notified after the agenda is published, the vote can be added to the agenda as an urgency add-on under the Brown Act. There are a couple of limitations for both of these exceptions. The just cause exception may only be used twice per calendar year by individual members. In addition, either exception by individual members is limited to not more than three consecutive months or 20% of all meetings in a calendar year. Now, the three consecutive months limitation is irrespective of the calendar year. So, for example, if a legislative body member invokes one of the exceptions in, say, October, November, and December, they cannot invoke it again in January. You can invoke it for November, December, and January, but then not again in February. So there has to be a break in the 3 months maximum, irrespective of the calendar year. Effective January 1st, 2024, AB 361 procedures are no longer applicable, and AB 2449 expires on December 31st, 2026. And after that, the only means of remote participation is traditional teleconferencing under the provisions of the Brown Act. So I'm happy to answer any questions. Kind of in summary, the intent is to get legislative bodies back to in-person meetings as much as possible, but providing some exceptions, again, under the old traditional teleconferencing measures under the Brown Act, but also continuing the AB 361 if there's an emergency for a limited time, as well as the two new exceptions again for a limited time. So that's where we are come March 1st. The district will need to consider making some exception, making arrangements again for in-person meetings, not only for the board as a whole, but for the committees underneath the board. And there are two other considerations that the board will need to think about. One is the continuation of remote participation by the public. AB 2449 does not talk about that, except if there's remote participation by one of the members. But if you're all in person, 2449 does not require remote participation by the public. But I think we've all learned that remote participation is a good thing for the public. It encourages public participation. But there is a cost associated with it, obviously, continuing the technology. The other consideration is remote participation by staff. Do you want staff in person when the board is meeting in person, or do you want to continue to let staff participate remotely? Those are things that maybe the board ought to put on an agenda in January or February to make a decision and give some direction to Mr. Stedman with respect to continuing the technology for remote participation, either for the public or for staff in general. Again, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you for the report, Les. Very, very thorough. I learned a lot, actually. I know I've spoken with Rich a little bit about this and some board members, and I'll just throw a few ideas out there and we can get the ball rolling. We have a little bit of time, but I'm really glad this is agendized. I know every board, every jurisdiction is handling things differently. And, you know, I think the idea is that, you know, for our board meetings, there will be getting back together. You know, there's this idea that there may need to be hybrid and or accommodations. And that's the part where I know there's at least one other JPA I'm a part of with the California Vanpool Authority that even before the pandemic with 14 counties all over California, the agenda was quite long with the location of where each of the board members was. But I think the main question we need to ask one another is, you know, how do we handle in person? What accommodations are allowable? And, you know, would it be hybrid? Prior to the pandemic, we did encourage public participation remotely via written correspondence. And perhaps that's the accommodation we allow for. But I am anxious to get everybody's take. If I can just, you know, offer what I think might be best is we continue to, you know, with this idea that we be in person and make accommodations should there need to be by posting the address of whoever is not able to be present that staff be in person, and that we move that direction. I think that's important. And I think most bodies have done that if they haven't already. I think the city of Marina is still meeting via Zoom. Maybe that'll come to an end. I'm not exactly sure. But I think at this point in time, we're looking for feedback from board members. And, you know, every jurisdiction's done it differently. So I'm anxious to hear from folks. Great. There's okay. Good. Sandy, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, Chair McShane. I'm tend to agree with your thinking in terms of the approach. I am wondering though, I just wanted to ask Mr. Gerard, the how much we can talk about what we want to do here. I heard you mention agendizing this for discussion. So I want to make sure that I don't talk about things that I ought not to be talking about. Yeah. Now.
In my opinion, it's consistent under the Brown Act to perhaps give some direction to Richard about bringing back something after the first of the year, because it's all related to remote participation, which was noticed on the agenda.
Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, I think that makes sense. And, you know, we are going to be dealing with a new era, and we'll figure it out as we always do. I think I will say that in terms of remote participation by the public, you know, that's something that we're doing at the city, we're doing at the other agencies I work with. And but I also am sensitive to the challenge that it can pose for staff. So it would be helpful to have staff weigh in about what's going to work for them as well, mm-hmm. I think. And then I have a related question about, and maybe this is something that we can't really talk about here, but I'm just wondering if we could get an update on the movement to every other month, or I think we talked about potentially having meetings less frequently.
I think that one, maybe that one needs to wait for another time, but you know, the remote participation, my understanding, I failed to mention this, is that the state legislature is intending to take up kind of a comprehensive review of the Brown mm-hmm. Act, perhaps this legislative session. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we keep our fingers crossed, perhaps there'll be a little bit more flexibility with respect to remote meetings, but we'll wait and see. You know, the legislature likes to impose requirements on entities like us, which they don't have to do themselves. So anyway.
No, thank you. Thank you, Sandy. And to your point, because I think it is indirectly related, we did discuss at a previous meeting the idea that we may not have as many meetings. And we've kind of done that. You know, we've canceled some meetings so that when we do meet, it's more meaningful. So that kind of fuels this other reason for we go in person. We make accommodations should they present themselves with the proper notice of location and so forth. But lots of hands have come up. So great, let's go with Zach, and we'll go on down the line, and we'll have some direction for staff. So Zach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, my thoughts are, I mean, obviously, irrespective of what my own personal thoughts are, we have a very specific direction from the state. And so I think that we will honor maintaining accommodation when and if needed. Reminding the fact that we are a regional commission, and therefore it's a pretty significant commute for, say, somebody from the San Lorenzo Valley that might have a wood stove conversation, or somebody from San Benito County that may have whatever issue they have. Maintaining, in essence, the ability for remote participation from the community, I think, is actually essential to ensure access. The third part is that I don't really feel comfortable as a body providing direction to Rich regarding remote or not regarding staff. I feel like that's an internal decision, not a board decision. And also boards change. But I mean, that's really up to our APCO about what kind of work environment he has. For example, at the county in Santa Cruz, you know, we've gone about a third, a third, a third for fully remote and hybrid, and then people that are there full time. And if there are employees that you know, whatever it is, I just feel like that isn't really a board decision. I would rather have that be a Rich managing his team decision. And if that means that they're all remote, that means that they're hybrid, or that means they're in person, we will, as a board, work to accommodate from a policy perspective, whatever presentation or information we get from staff, however it comes. It's not like we haven't been able to function the last 3 years getting information remotely. So my direction would be that we stay out of that and let that be run by the district. But the other two things, one is state driven and the other would be just to allow as much remote participation from the community as possible, just given the regionality of the board. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. No, no, super helpful, especially with the staff direction. You're right. That's appropriate. So thank you. Yeah, we're getting closer. And wow, even we lost some hands up in the air. So, okay, then let's go to Director Phillips.
Yeah, I agree with Zach on one and not on the other. I think having the public being able to participate remotely is a lot better, especially as mentioned, a regional place like this. But frankly, we've had a staff participating remotely at the board, and I just feel better, in, you know, once every month or once every 2 months for staff, to, even if they're working remotely, to come in and talk to us directly. And we've had a number of times when we have a presentation remotely and they have a glitch in it or something, and it doesn't work as well. So if my preference, I'm not giving direction, my preference would be that when staff is doing a presentation to us, that they do it directly. But that's just my home, so I won't be on there. So that's my thought. Thank you.
Okay, well, we've you know, at least shared that opinion with Rich, and it sounds like we will be meeting less frequently, but with more meaning in person, with accommodations as prescribed by the state. And I think we're getting there. So, all right, Colin, you ready to take us home?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be real quick. I agree with everything Zach Friend said.
Okay. Rich, you feel like you have enough there to go off of, and we can kind of refine this, but I think it's been a great discussion. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's been helpful, and I don't see an issue with staff presenting in person. We do have most of our management that would be doing the presentations have been working here at the facility, so being in person is not a problem. One of the issues we do have, we're having difficulty just with the remote meetings and our you know, bandwidth with a lot of people getting on. It's actually compounded significantly when we do a hybrid meeting. We actually have to have another individual running the OWL. So that does add a whole level of complexity. Not that it can't be done, but I'm just saying that we're probably gonna have to invest in some more new and improved gear that has improved significantly since we've invested in the initial gear. So, you know, like I said, that just takes, it's sort of like we can do one or the other really well. A hybrid, we can probably do it, you know, not as well. And it's going to take a lot more resources. But I do hear the comments with respect to being a regional agency. Fortunately, we don't have typically a lot of public input, even though we've been trying for that. But we'll move forward with the expectation that to the extent we can, we'll try to have a hybrid meeting for the public to engage. And we'll bring this back at the next item and sort of flesh out what the plan looks like so we can get additional comments from the board.
Cool. Cool. And I'm happy to follow up with you, Rich, as well between now and then. And we can look at what other area districts are doing, even regional boards. So good. Yep. Okay. Well, I think we've exhausted this, and I'll just take it to the public in the event that there's anybody on. I don't see anything. Okay. Siri, anything received?
Nothing received at the district office at all.
Okay, great. Well, that'll bring this to conclusion. And the next item, I wasn't clear. Is this an action item? I could ask you, Rich or Anna. It looks like we're just receiving, but are we accepting? That wasn't quite clear.
At this point, you're just receiving the report from Badawi and Associates.
Okay, I just want to be sensitive to that because it's our last item and I don't want to lose quorum. So it's a report that we're receiving. There is no action, but certainly an important one. So with that, we'll turn it over to Rosa and ultimately Mitesh, who I believe is with us. So Rosa.
Hi. Before that, I just wish everybody a happy holidays.
I'll have to bow out in about 10 minutes. I know this might go a little longer. So apologies if that's happening, but go ahead, Rosa.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, members of the board. So this last agenda item is to receive and accept the draft financial statements and independent audit report for the year ended June 30th, 2022. This was prepared by Vidalwi and Associates, and we have invited Mitesh Desai. He's a principal with Vidalwi and Associates, and he's going to do the presentation for the financial audit.
Thank you, Rosa. Mr. Chair, members of the board, let me just share my screen quickly. I just have a brief, maybe it's longer than brief presentation, but I'll try to keep it moving. So just, I think, hopefully I'm sharing the correct screen. So in terms of the agenda, I'll be going over our engagement team, our deliverables and scope of the audit, the areas of primary emphasis for the audit, our auditor's report and financial statements, our required communications that we need to make to the governing body, new accounting standards that will be coming your way, and then just some time at the end to if there are any questions, but feel free to interrupt me if you do have any questions, I'll be happy to pause. So in terms of the engagement team, so I was the engagement partner and I had two associates helping me with our field work. And we also have a quality control reviewer who looks at our work papers and the report just as a fresh set of eyes. And then also to make sure that we followed the accounting and auditing requirements. In terms of deliverables, so we performed a financial audit on the district's financial statements. And with that, we also will be issuing a letter with the results or findings of the audit, which we're also gonna be presenting at the end of this presentation. So it just mainly will tell you what is the scope of the audit, what did we find, is anything reportable, which will be in this presentation as well. So. In terms of areas of primary audit emphasis, these are just things that we looked at, I guess, more closely than other areas. We do look at all areas of the financial statements, just not in equal amounts. And we, in terms of risk, revenues and receivables is always the more critical area because of a default risk we have to consider for all audits, which is the risk of improper revenue recognition. And we do that by looking at significant revenues. We look at analytics, revenues, revenue actuals to budget and so forth. And we also look at unearned revenues. And with pension and other post-employment benefits, which is the district's retiree healthcare plan, there are numbers that are presented on the financial statements that reflect liabilities relating to these benefit plans. And we do some close look at that to make sure that the numbers reported are correct and also that information that went into preparing those reports was accurate. In terms of our auditor's reports, so we will be issuing a clean opinion, which is referred to as an unmodified opinion. And that means that the financial statements are fairly presented in all material respects and significant accounting policies have been consistently applied. The estimates in the financial statements are reasonable and the disclosures that accompany those financial statements, we believe those to be complete and accurate. Looking at the financial statements. So this is looking at the government-wide financial statements, which are the consolidated financial statements and financial statements that are looked at on a more long-term basis. And you can see over the past 3 years, in terms of significant changes, you did have a significant increase in cash and investments. And this seems to be mainly relating to timing. I think the district received some grant revenues during the year or in previous years, and those grant revenues haven't been fully expended. So you do have a balance there, which if I go to the next slide here on slide number 11, you will also see a corresponding increase in other liabilities. Just something to, I should probably mention whenever that we're looking at charts, is that the y-axis is not always the same. So when you're looking at that difference between assets and liabilities, even though it looks much larger, we're looking at a different x-axis here. So there is always more comparability there with the other liabilities and the cash. The other significant changes are the net pension liability. So you'll notice that the net pension liability decreased quite drastically. And this, I guess, a bit of an unusual year, and also next year will be a bit unusual, is that CalPERS did experience large gains in the pension plan during fiscal year 2021. And the net pension liability is presented 1 year behind. So these liability numbers are actually as of June 30, 2021. And the reason for the timing difference is just that we need audited information from CalPERS, which takes time. So there's GASB allows the information to be older, even though it's not the same date. But you also see there's a corresponding increase in deferred inflow of resources here. And this increase in deferred inflows is related to the net pension liabilities. So when you have certain types of changes in the pension liability, certain types of changes aren't permitted to be reflected immediately in your income statements. So they get deferred or get put into a parking lot, so to speak, and they will get gradually reflected into your expenses. So next year you will see probably a large deferred outflow as the net pension liability goes back up. Looking at net positions, so net position is just essentially your equity, which is your assets minus liabilities, and then also in that is deferred outflows and inflows. And it's categorized into net investment and capital assets, restricted and unrestricted. So net investment in capital assets is just your monies that are, or your, I guess, equity that's in capital assets, less any debt used to acquire those capital assets, like if you had any bonds or leases. The district has none. And nothing significantly changed there. There's a slight decrease for depreciation. Restricted are monies that are externally restricted. So these are monies that are, you have to use them for a specific purpose, and the restriction is external to the district. So the board does not have control to change, you know, how that money will be used. And then unrestricted is essentially the difference between all the categories. And you'll see it's negative, and it's really just because of those long-term liabilities relating to pension. Probably just now it's just pension. The other post-employment benefits is small. And this is looking at your change in net position from year to year. Nothing very significantly different here. I think this was a bit of a... I guess nothing. I don't want to cause more confusion, but it's slightly related to the pension plan, but otherwise it's not significant of change. This is looking at the general fund, comparing fund balance that's unrestricted from year to year, and comparing it that to your annual expenditures year to year, and kind of estimating in terms of an unlikely scenario where the district receives no more revenues, how long would you be able to operate? And the GFOA recommends no less than 2 months, so 2 to 4 months. And the district has quite a healthy fund balance. So nothing that we would start getting overly concerned about at this point, but it's a good position to be in. And here's the district's annual pension contributions. So even though your net pension liability goes up and down quite significantly, I guess recently it's been going up and down significantly, your pension contributions or your required contributions are smooth by CalPERS. So they will gradually reflect any benefits or losses in your required contributions. So you'll probably still see a gradual increase from year to year, you know, whatever is going on with their investments, just easier to project and budget for. And also, I guess, meets their goals. Moving on to the next slide, we have here an important disclosure that's in the pension disclosures, which is a sensitivity analysis of relating to discount rate. So your net pension liability, one of the key assumptions in there is the discount rate used by the actuary, which is 7.15%, which is the long-term expected rate of return from CalPERS investments. And this is just the what-if scenario. Had the discount rate been different, what would be your net pension liability? So you can see that with the lower discount rate, you see a much higher number for the net pension liability. And you know, if the discount rate was 1% higher, you'd get a much lower net pension liability. So just to give you a range of what this number could be, doesn't mean that one number is more correct than another number. And in terms of what's expected, it is expected in the future that I think they've already mentioned, I don't know if it's adopted formally yet, but it is expected that the rate will be about 6.8 or 6.9% next year. So you should see an increase in your net pension liability next year. This is looking at the district's annual OPEB contributions. Unlike CalPERS, these are almost voluntarily made by the district. So it's good that you're making them. And yeah, it's not like CalPERS where they, you know, it's a contractually or required contribution. And this is looking at your OPEB funded status. So this is also a number that's 1 year old. It's that you present, because we need to present audited information. There was a decrease in your unfunded liability, and it was mainly a result of an increase in your plan assets, probably a mixture of investment returns and additional contributions. So all positive things here. And in the disclosures, you should see a sensitivity disclosure for OPEB, and there's one related to discount rate. And again, you see that the number would be double, or you know, it would be a net OPEB asset had the discount rate been different. So I think with OPEB, the district seems to be in a good position at this point. Another sensitivity disclosure is a sensitivity disclosure relating to the healthcare cost trend rate. So an assumption that goes into this number is how quickly healthcare costs will grow in the future. And an actuary makes assumptions relating to that. So had the assumption been 1% lower or 1% higher, you can see that again, similarly, you would have a slightly higher net OPEB liability, or you would have a net OPEB asset. And just going on to our required communications, I'll maybe just touch on these very quickly. Some of them are, since there was really not much in terms of reportable things that are very significant to that the board needs to be aware of. This is just a couple of slides. The first two is our responsibilities as auditors, management's responsibilities. And essentially what they're saying is that our responsibility as the auditors is to opine, perform an audit in accordance with the auditing standards, give an opinion on those financial statements as to whether they're fairly stated in accordance with the accounting rules, you know, evaluate internal controls that management has put in place, and also to report our audit findings to the governing body. Management are still responsible for the financial statements, even though we assist in putting them together. So they do review them and take ownership of them. They are responsible for putting in place internal controls and complying with laws and regulations. And when we have audit findings, management is responsible for correcting those audit findings and also informing us of any fraud or illegal acts that may have occurred during the year. Our responsibility also includes independence. So we follow rules set by the AICPA and the state board to make sure that we're independent of the district, which is why you hire an external firm to do the audit, is you want an opinion free of bias. The timing of the audit was done in accordance with our engagement letters. In terms of new accounting pronouncements, there was quite a big accounting pronouncement, GASB Statement 87, which changed completely the accounting rules for leases. And it impacted many agencies, but we didn't really consider it to be a significant accounting standard for the district, just because the district doesn't have very material leases that were really applicable to the standard. So we evaluated them, we obtained some information from management, but we found that it's not worth the cost of implementing the standard is not worth the actual benefit to the financial statements. So nothing was recorded there. The others relate to construction period interest, some miscellaneous items, and then changing the name of the comprehensive annual financial report to annual comprehensive financial report, which doesn't impact the district. In terms of estimates, so we talked about pension and OPEB plans, and those have actuarial assumptions that go into those numbers. The other estimates that are in the financial statements are your allowance for uncollectible amounts relating to accounts receivable, and then also the useful lives of capital assets. And you know, accompanying the financial statements, you'll see that they're quite some lengthy note disclosures or narratives, which are the footnotes. And that just provides additional information to the reader about the financial statements. So these are just a brief listing of the most significant disclosure, which are the accounting policies, cash and investments, capital assets, the retirement plan, and then other post-employment benefits. So that just provides you more information about what investments the district has, what type of capital assets the district has, what was the activity of capital assets, retirement plans offered, benefits offered, actuarial assumptions, and so forth. And other than that, we had no difficulties in performing the audit, no material audit adjustments, and no disagreements with management. We didn't identify any material weaknesses in internal control relating to internal controls. Before we release the financial statements, we'll obtain a letter from management, which is representing to us that they take ownership of the financial statements, that they gave us all the facts that we need to be aware of, all the information we received was valid and complete. We're not aware of any consultations, no other material written communications. We don't have any concern that the district will be, continue to exist in the future. And we haven't been become aware of any fraud or illegal acts as part of our audit. And in terms of new accounting standards, we do have quite a few, but luckily, I think only one really would have an impact on the financial statements of the district, which is GASB Statement 96, which just would recognize an intangible asset and a lease, or not a lease, but a liability relating to any subscription-based IT arrangements. So your Sela, for example, which maybe if it's a multiple-year subscription-based agreement, you'd recognize an asset and a liability for that agreement. But other than that, you do have compensated absences that changes some of the compensated absence accounting, but that's going to be all the way 2025. And that's all I had. But if there are any other questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Yeah, I want to thank you, Mitesh and Rosa. The Budget, Personnel, and Nominating Committee did review this. We did have some questions. It went very smoothly. Clean audit is always a good audit. So this is just a presentation. And I just want to look to the board to see if there's any questions at this time. Can't see everybody, but let's see here. And you can always help me, Siri, if there's any hands raised that you see. Doesn't look like it. So we'll go to the public. I don't see anything there. So just bringing it back, Les, just confirm for me, there is not a motion and a second needed, right? We just received this.
Correct. But Chair, I'm not sure you have a quorum anymore.
Well, okay. So we do or do not need a motion?
You don't, but you can't take any action because you don't have a quorum. So,
okay.
But there's nothing necessary here, but I think... Okay. The meeting probably needs to end. I know we're at the end anyway, but
we are. And, Santa's waiting. So, Mitesh, great job. It's always great working with you. Rosa, you should be proud. And to everybody that's still here, I just want to adjourn and wish everybody a terrific holiday and a happy new year. We'll be back at it before we know it. So, times 2:55, we stand adjourned.
Take care, everybody.
All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.